The races. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name's Zach. This week, I'm joined by my wonderful, wonderful friends, Mark and Logan, otherwise known as the regular crew.
Yes.
How are you two doing today?
Feeling racy.
I don't know. I couldn't quite eat it like Mark did.
You know, I will possibly fix it in post.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Also, Mark, did you just say feeling racy?
Yes. Yes. Oh.
Yeah. Ooh. I don't think that's what you think it means.
Well, you know, fitting the theme, just kind of fitting into a theme. I'm feeling like a race. Yeah. Like a race. Notes.
Mark feels like a racehorse today.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're getting back. Now I got to keep the beginning in for context.
Yeah, exactly. See?
Oh my gosh.
Today we've got a talk show. This main topic here is kind of fueled by our buddy Mark over here. So, Mark, do you want to introduce us to today's topic?
Yeah, and this kind of came, we had a real kind of a brief conversation a while back offline about talking about how all role-playing is storytelling. And the thing we didn't really get into is it's not necessarily good storytelling. And I thought that might be something that's worth kind of going into, is when is good storytelling bad role-playing, or vice versa? When is good role-playing bad storytelling? And I thought there might be some room to kind of dig into that a little further. I think that's the basic topic.
And it's a good thing to think about, because, you know, us especially, as we've been talking offline and throughout these however many years we've been doing this, that we enjoy a good story. And it's really a strange balance when you throw in all of the rules and system side of things, but it's all about telling the story. And I think when you go off into a lot of role playing, it can take away from that storytelling feeling. I think
it can, and I think, and correct me if you guys feel differently, but I think the most satisfying experiences that I've had anyway are when the two do mesh, when you have good role playing and a good story.
Yes.
But I think it can feel kind of counterintuitive to think, you know, well, I got a really great story here, but it's not a good role playing experience. You know, and I think, you know, the classic example of, you know, the GM who's a little full of his story and doesn't give the players any agency is a perfect example of that. You know, the other side of that, of course, is, well, let's face it, dice don't give a damn about dramatic structure.
No, they don't.
Dice can screw up. You know, you might have this huge climactic boss battle and the dice just say, nope, that was an easy win, done. You know, story-wise, that can be really unsatisfying and anticlimactic, but role-playing-wise, hey.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? What are some other examples of things that make for good storytelling, bad playing, or vice versa?
Yeah, see, this goes a lot of different directions, so we're going to go a lot of different, I think, squirrel paths here, but... as usual. I mean, that's just us doing talk shows.
Yeah.
I think the hard part is when there's a portion of being a narrator, being a game master, being a director for a game that you are a writer. And, you know, we wear lots of hats, you know, in this position. Mm. And you need to make sure that the writer side does not overtake the fact that it's a game and that's a collaborative story.
Yes.
And I think back to your point of the whole making sure that you're not the person as a game master that you're just trying to tell a story and your players are your unwitting victims to listen to your story. That it is, you know, there is options involved to allow them to contribute. That's definitely a huge part of it. Been in more than a few situations where a narrator just rambles on. And it's like, okay, but what? When do I get to do a thing?
Yeah.
Why are your NPCs cooler than all of the PCs? Like,
And to kind of go along with what you said, if they make like one solution for a situation, you know, that makes it really tough for you as a player to feel like you influenced the story by taking the route you wanted to take versus the only option.
Very much right. So.
Yeah, collaborative is, I think, is a very, very key word there, what you just said.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of, you know, a good experience for everyone.
And I don't need to say it, but, you know, that's kind of why everybody's at the table. Because you're there together. It is collaborative by nature.
And I'm going to say this pretty directly. If you don't want to do the story with people, then roleplay games are not for you.
Or play solo.
So, there's plenty of solo.
That's also a possibility. Yeah, solo play is a great thing. But, like, if you really just want to get into writing the stories, like, go be a writer. We need more good stories, please. Go be awesome, you know?
Yeah, you love a system and a setting, write modules or adventures for
that. Even then, I would say you have to have a mindset for, you know, the collaborative and the things go wrong.
Right.
Yeah, on that same note, on the player side of things, some players really like to get into writing their backstories and some don't write anything. And I think you can take writing your backstory too far. You really need to allow yourself to discover who your character is from the beginning. If you have this mindset that there are some amazing, great swordsmen and you, for whatever reason, the dice rolls say, no, you can't ever hit with a melee attack ever. But anytime you throw a knife, you're on point. You actually can't miss. In fact, you've critted more times with throwing a knife than you have any time with melee attacks. Maybe the view of your character needs to change. And if you don't have the flexibility in the backstory or in who you've made them to be, to allow that discovery to happen, you're going to feel really, you know, either kind of out of sorts or you just wasted a whole bunch of time writing a backstory that doesn't matter anymore.
That's true. Yeah. And again, that all comes back to the collaboration.
Yes.
You know, I think, you know, like that being such a key word that happened, that's for everybody around the table.
It's really crucial to have that across the table, you know. When you're sitting and playing a game together, because like I said, that's kind of the whole point. It's kind of frustrating when things clash like that too, because it can cause a little bit of tension at the table. You know, whether it's active tension or just kind of that subconscious tension that can happen, but you just want everybody to feel included too. And when things get too complicated or you don't involve your players as much in helping tell that story, it can sometimes turn out not as fun as the alternative, in my opinion.
And part of that too is that the same flavor is getting everybody involved. You know, if you're only targeting one or two of the characters most of the time, some others can feel left out.
Oh, that's very true. Yes.
In a story, yes, you want your main characters to be the focus so the reader can, you know who to follow, and secondary characters are fine. But in a group dynamic of a role-playing game, you want a lot more balance.
Everybody's a main character.
Exactly.
And you have to allow them all to have that spotlight. Like, sure. That's weird.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about this a little bit in the past. That's where you get into that those IP games like Indiana Jones or the ones James Bond. Like when you have multiple people and a quote unquote main character, it's like it's hard not to focus on that main character, but you've got to bring all these quote unquote little people.
Yeah.
Side characters into that main light. That's that's what makes it that collaborative story.
Very true. Yeah. Sala needs just as much of a action sequence as Indy.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. Which is weird because in the show, you're only going to see Indy's view and then Sala telling him what happened, you know, that he did. But
yeah,
in a role play situation, we need to go see that because that's somebody, that's a person playing that. That's somebody taking time out of their night, their day to do this with you, you know?
Yeah.
So they need that moment.
Absolutely.
I'm going to take this a different direction a little bit. I'm going to say something a little controversial for, you know, I think all of us as fans of 7th Sea. And I'm going to say that actually the 20 questions is problematic for this exact reason. Mm. Don't hang me up just yet. Let me explain.
Go ahead. Yeah, no.
So when 7th Sea First Edition came out, having backstory direction wasn't really something that was huge in role-play games. There were some that did it, but it wasn't the mainstream thing. And 7th Sea First Edition was kind of battling against that D20 life, D20 world, class and race combo that, you know, defined you or whatever. And they were really trying to get into the whole, like, okay, but what do you think about this? Who's your family? Where did you come from? And, you know, looking at 7th Sea, having cultures instead of races, having that feeling of who you are and who you know matters a lot. The 20 questions were a great thing. It really kind of, you know, knocked people out of their stupor of, oh, I am a fighter mage, or I am a, you know, an orc barbarian.
I'm doing this just so I can get an action surge.
Exactly.
And get a second attack. No, yeah, it's like.
And then when second edition was created, that's, you know, decades later, and the mindset behind role-play games was much more open and much more story-focused as opposed to battle game made into a story game. And much more, there are many more options out there. And so in some ways, I think, you know, the 20 questions brings people into a position where they feel like they need to elaborate a huge backstory for their characters. And then as the narrator, you feel like you're trapped to try and make sure those points are hit on, that you actually, like, you know, grab those things so that character feels validated and that you actually, like, listen to it. Even if it doesn't fit for the whole group, you need to make sure you hit that person's backstory. I say that with, you know, huge addendas because I love the 20 questions and I have converted the 20 questions to other systems and other settings.
Yeah.
Because I think it really does help certain people, but I think it can be too much too.
I think a big part of that is that keyword that you said before, collaborative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it works if the entire table sits down and everybody's doing it together. It's a great opportunity for people to bounce their questions and find connections with each other as they're doing it. I think the problem, and I think we've all seen this, is when you have a group and you have that one player who comes in with a binder, Lord of the Rings tome of character backstory, and everybody else has to create a character around what they've written, for themselves. Right. Yeah. And, you know, they've gone and sat in the room and written this in a vacuum of, you know, what they want.
Right.
But
which is, you know, sometimes which is okay because these people are individuals, right? You know, if you look at them in the world independently, but
yeah. And it's fun to see
at the table.
It is fun to see that kind of enthusiasm, but I think if you get together and it's funny, you're talking 7C, but I was listening recently to a thing about Traveler and kind of bringing back Traveler at that life path character creation. Mm-hmm. And that was great. If you're doing that together, those are great opportunities to find places of, you were in the Merchant Marines, I was in the Merchant Marines, maybe we served together, and now you're in, you know, these two characters have a connection.
Boom,
they
connects.
Have a, you know, they have something. And I think if you use your backstory to connect to the story, that's a big, big win.
Yeah, I am all for that. Like, write out those books of stuff. As long as it's resources for you to use to try and plug in other people. You cannot be the dictator and come in and say, you all have to, you know, bend to my thing. And I say that not just at players. I say that to the DMs. I say that to the narrators. You got your pages and pages and pages of backstories of your world's history. A, your players aren't going to read it. Sorry, dude. They don't even read the player's handbook. but also
some
like,
of them do. Some of them like to create, like to read a lot. But
I mean, yeah, some do. You're right. Yeah. I'm generalizing for the sake of for the sake of incitement, playing devil's advocate and you know slapping people. But I think there's a big part of it to think about the fact that this world should be living and breathing, and you should know of what things are happening. That's 100% true on all those points, but you should also allow that your characters, your players, can affect that, can change that, can mess with what you had planned, you know?
Now, I think I'm just a different kind of writer for my games, because I personally do enjoy that building the story around the players and working with them either collectively or individually and going, hey, here's, you know, here's what's going on in the lore, you know, of the actual written on the page lore, and something you've said about your character. Let's go into that and we can talk about it, and that helps me kind of tie things into the story a little bit easier. Yeah, it's kind of meta-y, but I kind of have embraced the fact that I'm okay being a meta gamer.
Well, no, that's not meta. That is, I think, as a narrator, you know, being responsible and responsive to what your players are giving you. But, you know, if I'm building two or three things around each character, that's fine. If I've got to build around 20 different things, that makes it a little bit more difficult.
It's a little harder.
Yeah,
I don't often like to establish a lot of things before I know what the characters are.
Yeah, it can be hard.
A little bit.
Yeah. Unless you have an agreement going into it from the beginning. If you're like, oh, cool, let's build a 7C, you know, campaign around boats and no one's a sailor. Well, this is going to be very interesting or very frustrating.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah, and it's neat to see those moments at the table when your players realize that their character is wound so tightly into the story, much more than they realized. and they go, "Oh gosh, that's insane!" And then they see how intense that the story can get when they're directly involved in it.
Right.
You know, this is this rival that I wrote about, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's key, you know, just being able to have those moments. And it also depends on the players you're playing with. You know, some players need warning. And so I think building off of what they've already given you for writing helps, because they might be the ones who really know their stuff and they're gonna remember their own backstory. Yes, some people do forget their own backstories, but you know they're going to be really engaged with that, and you can give them a little heads up. Hey, this next session is going to kind of deal with some of your past. Are you ready for that? You know, sort of thing. And those other players where they can come in with no story, and you're like, ooh, and this is the person who shot your father, and they're like 100% into it. You know, they don't even have to know what's coming. They're just like, yeah, that's right, that bastard. And they start giving you details about this guy, and you're just like, where did that come from? Well, they're just doing what I do. They're making it up. You know,
sure. But the other thing you have to watch out for, too, are players who are creating these backstories in a vacuum that come together and the stories conflict.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
I've been a guard for the city for years. Well, I grew up in the same city, and the guards were wiped out in a battle, and there are no guards. And, you know, then you got to try and set these two people together and say, look, you know, there's got to be some common story to some degree.
Yeah, at that point I would go, okay, are either of you all willing to change one of those facts? And you know, if not, it gets a little complicated.
But
most of the time it's been received fairly well, at least by my players.
Yeah, and I think that
and you all good. Of course.
Oh yeah. Of course.
You know, that brings to mind, I don't know if I've done this with any other groups of mine, but the way we, the three of us, sit down and create characters and help create baselines for a story is really neat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically like an extreme version of a session zero.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do build those characters together, mm-hmm. and kind of help, I don't know, make a party that's somewhat balanced and a story that's kind of neat at the end of the day.
That is dope.
Exactly. I was going to kind of flip this and say, okay, we've seen how, you know, people get too involved in a story. What about when you want a bad story, or maybe not want a bad story, but the role playing requires the story to be kind of thrown out the window? Do you still find that satisfying?
Okay, so give me an example on that, because like
the example I used earlier was the dice dictating, quote unquote, bad storytelling. You know, something of an anticlimactic finale, or some sort of something not fitting the story, but it has to be there to give everybody a big twist. An example, we just recently played a game. And I just kind of shoehorned a battle in the middle of some place that it didn't really make sense that there would be bad guys there, but darn it, it made it exciting and fun and gave you guys something to play. So, you know, there were no complaints for it, but if I was watching a movie, yeah, I would probably say, that makes no sense. That's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you guys feel about that? Those type of situations.
The thing that comes to mind the most is the magical wave over of the travel time. You know,
yes,
that's an experience where it's great for the table. Mm-hmm. But you know, in the movie, maybe we want to watch a little bit of that. That travel progress.
Sometimes that's actually a really good thing for movies. all of the Indiana Jones red line. Yeah.
True. But in Lord of the Rings,
the story is the travel, so right? You know, so
yeah, I would say that's a part of it. Part of it is the genre. What game are you playing, and how has that been in? But but yeah,
and what is the travel? Is it just the I need to show time in real time, mm-hmm. or are there things that happen with it? You know, case in point with the genre. If I'm just sitting on a plane, that ain't going to be too exciting unless there's, you know, somebody attacking the plane, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's not, there's not a lot to show there. But if I'm going across, you know, hills covered with warring tribes and different factions, that's a whole other thing, because you're basically going through a war zone. Like, that's valuable travel.
It's entertaining, hopefully, for the viewer.
That's a good point.
When you look back on a roleplay session, when you look back on an adventure or whatever else not, things are not going to line up in a perfect story because it's still a game, and it needs to still be a game because we're still engaging it as a game. And there's a certain amount of good story requires rehearsal, requires planning, requires, all these certain steps. And people come to play a game to blow off some steam, not get another job. Mm-hmm. Most people. Some of us like it as another job, but whatever. I think it is key that you know, you don't try and think about it too much as being the session needs to look like a perfect story, because it never will if it's a good session.
Yeah,
because you're gonna have those moments where it's like, oh well, somebody rolled shitty and now these amazing adventurers just can't open a door,
right?
I'm sorry, that's the most boring thing to see in a movie, but it can be hilarious. I would say on the other side of things, it depends on the situation where it makes for, quote, a bad story. I think that might be down to if the role screws up your story, but there's still like plot points you wanted to hit. How do you make that into a cutscene? How do you make that into a quick 2-minute dialogue or 2-minute monologue of what happened in the background? I think we had this recent fight where basically we got a ridiculous roll, and what could have been this back and forth on snowmobiles, spoilers, ended up being just one hit and done.
Sure.
And was kind of nothing. And, you know, in that situation, you handed the reins off to explain what happened. But, like, we could have taken, you know, just an extra minute if we wanted to and really elaborated on that. being like, well, you got past this whole scene. This is what it would have been. Mm-hmm. So give me more. Give me some things. Okay, now give me a twist. Okay, now give me a, you know, some other thing that happens that I didn't expect or whatever. And just like make it this like storytelling exercise with everybody, theoretically.
True. True.
If that even matters. I don't think it really mattered in that situation. We got to show how fucking badass somebody was. And it worked out very well the way we did it. But that could just be a great experiment or a great exercise in, you know, elaborating on a simplified situation.
Mm. Sure.
Yeah. And I think that's that situation you explained was something we discussed a little bit in our reflection episode.
Yeah.
Also. So yeah. Mm-hmm. A little plug. If you haven't checked out that reflection episode for our outgun stuff, whenever that comes out.
Yes.
It's out. It might not be out. I don't know. But check it out. Definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think, but yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And, you know, I mean, if you're playing a game that relies heavily on random encounters, that's another case of something that it's going to be random. It's not going to necessarily have a good story structure type of flavor. But yeah, if you can kind of give it a little, you know, narrative weight, that could help.
And sometimes, you know, when you're trying to tell this story at the table with your players, and oftentimes you might come to that situation where they just maybe aren't catching on to the hints you've given or stuff like that. Sometimes that situation just goes the opposite direction. And it's hard to change that on the fly and turn that back into a good storytelling situation.
Sure. Yeah. Well,
because even though they might be having fun going off doing their thing, it's a bad story situation, yeah, right? They're not going through some of those options that you've planned.
Sure. And a lot of this, you know, sometimes the story and the game do come together. And a good example of that is exposition. You know, you need to explain things so that the players or the audience, depending, you know, whichever, you know, in this case, they're the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
So it's clear and, you know, and not weighing down. You know, as somebody who's studied theater and playwriting and writing in general, finding a good way to deliver exposition without just being info dump is one of the biggest challenges in storytelling.
Show me, don't tell me, but so, also like, how do you actually do that?
Yeah. But make sure you told
me. Yep.
Yeah. You know, so on that topic, I experimented with something I haven't really done before at the table. And that is giving each character an individual scene away from the other players at the table.
I love doing that.
So you give each individual person something that their character knows that the others don't.
Okay.
Which, so instead of revealing all this information to all of your players, giving each of them a little bit of either a hint to the bigger picture or this tool or gadget that's going to help them further on in the story, they're each feeling, I guess, more important to the story because they have this information that the others don't.
That could be a great technique. The challenge then becomes, do your players hoard, you know, the information is power. Do they hoard it?
Yeah.
Or, you know, do they release it and integrate it into the plot when necessary?
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yes.
It does become a responsibility, but that can also completely blow up too. Because you give them something that's very important to you, to the story to happen, and you hand it to their character at the start of the campaign, and then it's seven sessions later, and you're like, okay, that would be the time to use this thing, this knowledge, hello, and they aren't doing it because they've forgotten about it by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they didn't realize that that's what it was supposed to line up for. I think there's a key point behind when you do that, when you hand out that information, and in some ways knowing how to hand out that information. You know, if you're only playing online, there might be some limitations of what you can do, but in general, knowing whether your players are better at, audio comprehension versus written comprehension, you know, being able to, do they prefer to have an interaction with you, or do they prefer to have a note? Or maybe it's both. Maybe multiple methods are important. Playing in person, I always like grabbing somebody and pulling them off to the side and be like, hey, this is some stuff you see. You see this in Critical Role with doing whispers. I just like pulling them into another room. And then with online role play, I've literally created another voice channel I call the Whisper Room, where I'll just be like, cool, so-and-so, meet me in the Whisper Room. And sometimes I'll just go through everybody and spend 10 minutes and, you know, everybody gets a minute in the Whisper Room or whatever. Because part of the fun is like the shell game. One or two of the people might actually have a secret. Yes. The others just thought I'm checking in with them and be like, hey, how you feeling about this? How you doing with the character? Any questions with that level up? No? Okay, good. Let's go back into that group.
Yep.
And it's a one-on-one touch point that's very individualized to that person, but I can also use that to plant certain seeds.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's a situation where, you know, if they have that quest item that needs to trigger something and they forget about it or whatever, that's a great moment as the GM to go, oh, I should probably remind them about this thing, or lead a hint to it, and maybe it'll trigger that memory or something like that.
Playing a game like Paranoia, that sort of stuff is fundamental. Passing notes at the table.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're at a table, it's a great way of doing that too.
If Paranoia, anyone hasn't seen it out on the YouTube or wherever, Geek and Sundry has their big Paranoia sessions that they did. It's a huge, like, several hour long stream or whatever. But it's a really neat example of how the system runs with passing notes and keeping secrets and who's the communist? No. but you know. But yeah, it's, I love the whisper aspect of things.
Sure.
And a lot of those things sometimes are more character story connected than main story connected.
True.
You know, it'll lead to the overall main plot of things, and but I like to focus on the character's progression. And the importance of the character itself is kind of why I try to do those things. It helps them feel like they're making a difference in the story, right? You know, I'm asking them questions about their character, you know, showing that interest. And, you know, it helps fuel that creativity a little bit more.
Very true.
So coming to another angle on this, bad storytelling, maybe bad writing affecting an interesting view on a story that some took as bad. I know it's a little complicated, but if you've seen the second of the sequel trilogy for Star Wars, which the name I'm blanking on, a lot of people hated that one. And Last there's Jedi? some issues. Which one?
What was that? Like Last Jedi, the new sequel?
Yeah, new sequel. Not The Last Jedi, because that was the third one, right? No.
That was Rise of Skywalker.
That's right. So Last Jedi. Yeah. In that one, there are a number of issues that people had. I still liked it because I like Star Wars. But I think as a story, seeing who people thought were the main characters were, going off on a side mission, and that side mission basically being worthless, I thought was actually a really fun story mechanic. We got to use, basically as a way to show other parts of the world and kind of the behind the scenes and what was happening with the war. And we have a few main characters heading off to the casino planet and seeing, you know, all the war profiteers and seeing what's happening there. But effectively, that whole section was worthless for the story. It didn't add to the plot at all. But I think it really added to the whole, like, just because you're a hero doesn't mean you're infallible. And it was a really neat way to see, like, sometimes you make wrong choices. I think it would be difficult to handle properly. And I think the writers didn't realize how angry the fanboys were about their main pilot person not being the center of attention for the show. But I think if you handled it in a certain way, I think that could actually be a really fun mechanic in a role-play game, even though it's a shit story mechanic because we're pulling away from the main plot. This kind of is worthless. But I can think of more than a few role-play games where it's like, cool, you guys chose to go left when I had things for forward, backwards, and right. Let's see what happens here. Cool. Yeah, no, we had a great time. We saw some good stuff. We got some gambling in, some shopping. It was a good time. We escaped from stuff. Bad guy's still moving forward over here. Sorry. You went the wrong way, and I'm not going to stop you from doing what you want to do, and I'm not trying to screw you, but, like, eh? This is where we're at.
Yeah, and that's a little bit of that showing that, you know, the story around you is still progressing.
Very much so.
True.
Which is on the outside, seems a little cruel to do. You know, you're here to tell a story and have fun. And, you know, some people say you could just pause the thing that was happening. And
I don't think you can, though.
They do this thing. And right.
Like, to keep the verisimilitude of the villains still have plots. Now, don't you know, accelerate your plans. Don't be a dick about it. Don't be trying, you know, really hurt them or punish them. But, like, if you have this great war campaign set up and your players are like, yeah, this could be cool. We could do something, you know, war, or they don't even know. They're just like, we're adventuring. We're going to do some stuff. We're going to, you know, explore. And you present to them, you know, this great plot and this great war happening in the background. And the players are like, yeah, let's go check out that, paradise world where we can just go have a vacation and go see what happens there. Mm-hmm. The war still happens around them. Like, you can't just be like, oh, well, everybody decided to put a ceasefire until the heroes join. That seems super weird.
Sure. Now, the other way of approaching that, and I'm not saying this is better, obviously, but the game master could just say, okay, yeah, you go spend a week there, you don't find anything, and then you come back and now on to the real story, and kind of hand wave, you know, so they still have the agency to do that, but...
Yeah, I think that is definitely down to your players too, because some would be like, "No, I want to go experience that. I want to spend time in it."
Absolutely.
And others would be like, "Oh, I totally misguessed that. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's it. Thanks for getting us back on track." You know, and they would love that.
Yeah. And to your point, there can be a lot of excitement on that side quest.
There can be.
But why not?
Right.
So either way.
But you could also it put the entire Mortal Realms in feral, and everything's on fire.
True.
Yeah. Thinking about it, you know, it kind of makes it tough from my writing perspective, because a lot of times there are those main story components that are connected to the characters. So you've got a situation where it's like you have a scene prepared where that's an interaction between this person and one of your characters, or, you know, is in a location that this character has been before and it triggers something, or they encounter someone.
Okay. I've got a solution for that. And potentially, but keep going.
Yeah. And if, you know, if they're not there, it's hard to move that cheese sometimes.
Mm-hmm. 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 So part of the solution I put for that, which I think can help with encouraging people back to a storyline you've planned or whatever, and I'm trying to use this more, is the villain cutscene. We get to a good stopping point with where the players are at, and then there's a, for the audience, so the players, not the characters, we all get to see what's happening in the background, and pulling in the, you know, Darth Vader's talking to some commander and congratulating him on destroying such and such planet, and just let the players go, oh shit, that was my home, or whatever, you know, not saying you want to destroy their home, but like just things that can...
Well, that's what Leia did.
Yeah.
I mean...
Did Leia do that? Is that her fault?
Well,
that's interesting.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I think
it's more of a
showing. We could watch and analyze later.
Yeah.
No, the old West End Star Wars game did that a lot in their modules. Mm-hmm. They would have those little insert
boxes. Yeah, that was a great part of that system and design. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, that's something I should use more.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
Well, because it's the idea therein that we can see what's happening in the background, and, you know, you don't know how to present what's happening in the world sometimes, but allowing your characters to just be like, cool, I've seen this in the background. And then like, when you get back to the, like, okay, now we're in with your characters. Yeah. And that was the film, or, and you just like, and it's sort of like a newsreel saying like, okay,
yeah,
in recent news, local mining catastrophe happened on, you know, yeah. Alderaan. Mm.
It would whatever. Be, would be great for like a supers game, you know, yeah. The news reel, scene, right? You know, yeah. Something I've been doing, I've been playing a lot of Household. Something that they suggest doing, and they say, is using newspapers to help explain main event things that are happening in the house.
Makes sense.
So that's a really great tool I've been using to drop those big, you know, jaw dropping moments, these big oh shit moments.
Nice.
Getting that character reaction from the players.
Yeah. I think a lot of GMs though get nervous about that sort of stuff because they're giving players out of character knowledge.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you know, again, that's kind of one of those you have to kind of trust your players a little bit to incorporate that sort of stuff in the right way. Because I think another approach to, or another aspect of all of this is players behaving outside of the lines of their story, you know, doing the, either playing a character that is, well, I want to play a guy who's going to steal the party stuff and, you know, act, you know, I don't want to go save the kingdom. I'm going to screw it up. You know, that type of toxic player that we've talked about before, or the ones who just kind of get distracted. You know, I'm playing a big damn hero, but I saw something shiny over here and I don't care if the world blows up. I'm going to go do what I think, you know, I'm going to go after the shiny thing over here.
It's kind of hard to I don't want to say to handle those kind of players, but it's almost how you have to think about it, because it's a really tough situation, because if the rest of the people are all on board and doing, you know, appropriate meta knowledge based things, it's cool. And then you have somebody that's standing out and very obviously doing things differently than the rest of the group.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. It's tough.
Yeah. You know, you're playing spies and one guy says, I don't want to be a spy. I'm going to blow our cover, you know, because that's what my character would do. You know, that can obviously mess up a story.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's not to say like making a we out there different than the other's character is bad, but I think you just have to know how to use that in the right ways. Like,
okay. So yes. I do like the lone hero characters. Those are always fun. I mean, you know, Witcher is very much that. There's a few like Assassin Guild sort of stories and whatnot that I really enjoy. Mm. The Assassin's Creed video game is basically just a solo run sort of thing. There's a lot of video games that do that. Yeah. I think it's really neat. But again, that goes back to that. It's a collaborative story.
Yep.
And if you want to play the reluctant hero, then you need to work twice as hard to show both the reluctance and making sure you are joining with the group. It's not the group's responsibility to make part of the team. You have to come along.
Yep.
And you have to be willing to come along. And then if you want to show that reluctant hero, great. How is that reluctant hero coming along? You know, I think a great example of that would be Willow, where we have Mad Mardigan just being like, dang it, I'm going that way. Mm. Well, fine, I'll walk with you. And it's just he's just being angry, but he's actually going along with the group, but he's trying to show that he's that edgelord, you know, on the outside.
Reluctant, but still doing it. Yeah.
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 I think it's key.
Yeah, good comparison. Yeah, because you can have those people that act that way without actually acting that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Characters are weird because, like, you can have a really simple, not really in-depth backstory and still have a really great time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we've said the word collaboration over and over and over here, and rightly so. But I think one of the things that we have to come to terms with when we sit down with a group is everybody is different skill levels in terms of presenting a story. Mm. So, you know, you're going to have some people who are better at it than others.
Yep.
And, you know, it's finding that, you know, common denominator and, you know, kind of working through the things that, you know, some people may need a little bit more coaxing one way or another to.
Yeah, I think it goes both ways, not just like the presenting of the story narrator, but I think also the presenting of their own story as a player, too. Because that, 100%. That can, you know, a player can be so charismatic that everybody's like, oh, cool. Yeah, I'll go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're willingly putting themselves out of the spotlight. And so, you know, you have to kind of be able to see that and make sure that the spotlight still comes back to them. Some players don't want to be the main spotlight. Sure. That's fine. But they shouldn't always be second string either, you know. And that's
right.
That takes skill. That takes time.
And yeah. And as a GM, that's kind of tough because if you have one person who's there to move the story forward, you're getting that, you know, somebody's moving the story forward, thank God, you know, and it's very easy to fall into that, you know, supporting that person and just giving, you know, focusing on them too much. Kind of what we talked about. One of the things earlier is, you know, not sharing the story.
Yeah. I think that's huge. Whether it's the main story or just storylines that you think are fun. I see this a lot with like force sensitive characters in a Star Wars game. Even if they aren't the main character, just by the nature of the Force and how different some of the interactions can be with that, they can end up becoming that spotlight character more often. Sense. And so it's important to make sure that the pilot's still, you know, involved and the bounty hunter, and that you don't just completely get lost in Force woo woo stuff because not everybody at the table is a Force person, you know?
Yeah.
Something I'll try to do. It, with the whole spotlight, you know, if the main story, quote unquote, or this scene is focusing on somebody, I'll ask somebody else a question about their character that would maybe, you know, pertain to what they're doing in this scene and how past them influenced how they do this thing. And If you have a player that has a super detailed backstory, maybe they have that answer. But if they're not, maybe that helps this person be creative and make this detail about their past and their backstory. And so it still helps develop that character and kind of tie them into the story a little bit more.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. I just play a lot of games that have that character story built into the system. So, you know, those examples like 7th Sea has these character stories and Household has these specific character stories and memories and experiences and stuff like that.
Well, it's something that kind of brings me back to Ironsworn has that line in there, prep is play. And I think, you know, for a lot of people that, you know, creating a backstory and developing a character, that's a lot of fun. I mean, that could be a whole game in itself. Just,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, 100%. I think that's a key thing to keep up, not just with Ironsworn, but all games. Like, that is huge in general. That is, I think I see this more in reports recently, too, where, like, just people who buy the books to read them for a role-play game, present company included, is part of the play. You know, it's fun to just be in it.
Yeah.
Back when, you know, for FOSSA Star Trek, I used to sit and I would make up all 400 crew of a ship just, you know, just to have the character. Yeah. Never.
Super nerdy. You know, I love it.
Very, very nerdy. Yes. So
make your own cast of characters.
Yeah, very much so.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, say you need an NPC for later or
right there.
Or you are rolling up a new one and you go, ooh, I really liked this one that I made before. Yep. Boom. You already have one.
Exactly.
Yeah. See, I did that for a tabletop game, but I was Battletech, and I made up like a whole mercenary camp company and like all the infantry and all the mech warriors and all the, you know, pilots for other vehicles and like support staff. And like, yeah, you can just get lost in that stuff. It's so fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's understandable why people do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Completely.
It's fun.
It is very fun.
I know a lot of people don't like doing that.
Truth.
Definitely.
Of course.
It's a lot of work to do and effort, but.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's another weird angle on this then, speaking about the effort and the work. How do you guys feel about when a player's like, I don't want to learn a new game story system setting world, because I feel like I have to read all of this stuff and I have to get involved with all of this, you know, background stuff. Otherwise I'm not going to have any clue about what's going on. I'd rather just stay with what we know. Because so, that's something I've run into recently.
Oh yeah. Ooh. I think that's a lot of that out there.
There is, because a lot of people, you know, do have full-time jobs and maybe they don't have a lot of time for their hobbies, and reading a new system is a lot of work for some people.
Especially if it's a crunchy system.
But even if it's not about the system, maybe it's, you know, they're fine with learning mechanics. They want to learn the lore, or they don't want to learn, you know, the background of the world. How much do you think that it matters? Like, you don't have to know the lore to be part of it. Like, I don't know.
That's my take on a lot of the new games that we play. We play a lot of games on the show.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it is a lot of work to learn all the new lore and the system and the settings and everything like that. I, as a GM, when I'm introducing people to a system, that's a lot of what Session Zero is about. You know, I, who have done work learning the system and setting already, you know, we'll take system out of here if they're fine learning a system.
Yeah.
With the setting and lore, I will do my best to help them understand the world and the idea behind the world around them that they would be experiencing. And then oftentimes it's up to them. If they want to go further and learn, they can. But otherwise, it's that idea of, if the character doesn't know, that you're teaching them throughout gameplay.
Yeah.
So that story will kind of unravel as things go along. Yeah.
And that's an approach I would take too, is I would encourage them to maybe kind of narrow their character choices a bit. If you don't want to know much about the world, maybe you grew up on a farm and all you knew is this farm. And, you know, I think you could spend 5 minutes telling them about the world around this little farm, and then they can learn through play. You know, if you don't want to learn the rules, don't create a character who's the emperor of the world, you know.
Right.
That would know all the politics and stuff. So that's a way that you can kind of guide somebody if you have that to some degree.
Yeah, I think that's definitely
and I like that.
You know, is just being able to I think it comes down to still the player engagement, if they're willing to deal with not being that center stage, being that farm boy, you know, sort of situation. And just trusting that you're going to learn stuff. Like, even on well-known settings, I feel like I am constantly saying, hey guys, this is our canon. This is our version of the world. Like,
yes.
Don't worry too much about all the exact facts out there, because having a lot of resources for a setting is great and horrible. It's great because there's a lot you can pull on, but it's horrible because then you feel like you have to, you know, and
there's always somebody there who's read a part of the book that you haven't read, and they're going to let you know it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's just my style. I like to use the lore and everything as a reference rather than using it exactly by how it's written. Because there's oftentimes a lot, and you're going to miss something, right?
Of course.
Unless you've read it 80 times and are really great at remembering things.
Yeah.
which I'm not. you're going to miss something.
Sure. But let's kind of go back to, you know, if we can kind of maybe round this all up.
Yeah. What was our main topic?
Coming back to something I just kind of stated and kind of maybe dragged you guys along with. Do you feel that the best experience is when story and role play come together and do come together.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, you can plan everything with the story. Mm-hmm. You can prepare 12 options for every scenario. You can do everything in your nature, but you can't control what the dice do. Mm-hmm. You can't control how your players role play in a situation. And ultimately, you can't plan for everything. So,
of course.
Yeah, I think if we could have it so all the story and everything coming together.
Yeah. In a perfect world, right.
Moment, then yes.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just so rare.
Yes.
But that being said, I feel like, you know, the old saying about compromise is where everybody loses. Mm. I feel like that's the opposite in a role play situation. I feel like if everybody's coming to the table willing to compromise, everybody's coming with some sort of backstory prepared, but willing to have it change, or, you know, have a goal or plan for their character, but willing to have it adjust, being able to both embrace that narrative storyline and trying to find a good storyline together, but also are willing to embrace the chaos of dice. I think coming to the table willing to compromise is where everybody wins.
I like that.
I can definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
This gives me the idea to, you know, take a already existing story, like, say, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, right? And play through it at the table and see how those events make scenes that are the events and see how that story would actually play out when given the chance of rolling the dice and giving it over to the players.
That's always a fun. I've kind of done that, you know, play Star Trek and taking some, you know, other story and just kind of twist it into that Star Trek setting and play it. And it's not exactly the same because you're already twisting the story to some degree. But yeah, it is interesting to see how people play it out differently than the original.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, being able to go into it with that same mindset, and I think it depends on who you have there, whether you're trying to bring them in on the conspiracy of it or let them figure it out on their own. But, like, different characters, different storylines, you know, some players who want to go into that specifically to fuck with the storyline.
Yeah.
Because that would be fun and hilarious, and, you know, it's just neat to see what would happen.
When you know you're doing it, and you're all doing it together, it's fun.
Yeah. Very much
put a James Bond villain in Star Wars. You know. Go for it.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that fits exceedingly well, because both can be campy in their own ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
It's odd job, but with lightsaber blade instead of a regular blade.
Honestly. Yeah, he's got a lightsaber hat.
Yeah, exactly. Vibro hat, yeah.
Yeah.
Vibro hat.
Yeah.
That's great. Gosh. Well, gentlemen, anything before we could conclude this episode here today?
I think we covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we went a lot of places. Lots to think about. Tell us your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Comment down below. Absolutely. Come join us on the Discord. Let us know your thoughts on things. We'd love some other input.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, our goal is to grow this community so we have more people to talk to and play games with. Thank you, gentlemen, for sitting down at the table with me today and talking about whatever we want to. Because that's stuff. What we do most of the time.
Lots of stuff.
Lots of stuff.
Yes, like Logan said, do consider joining our Discord channel. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of discussions on topics and a place where you can live react to episodes and stories that we've told and are actively telling today. So we'd love for everybody to join, and we look forward to seeing you over there.